and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
And that's right, everybody. Welcome back once again to another edition of the Best Seat in the House podcast. As always, I'm your host, Rob Kramer, joined by my co-host, Daniel Bobo Kerlin. And Dan, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. As you can see, I managed to somehow, by some miracle of miracles, find my glasses after they had got lost in the one room that in my house that doesn't have any lights, the living room. And in case you don't know what happened, well, we'll get that a little bit when we talk about the Giants game, what happened there. Why?
That's true. And Dan told us the story on our Patreon, too. So if you want to hear the story right after it happened on our Giants and Jets postgame show we did Sunday evening after both games went final, you know, be sure and subscribe to our Patreon for $5. And you get a whole bunch of extra content, right, Dan?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so definitely, you know what? And, you know, you mentioned it, too. You know, we got a lot of things that we can get into tonight. I mean, realistically, there's the Jets debacle against the Cowboys, the great comeback win for your Giants on Sunday. The Mets and the Yankees are continuing to play the string out as the Mets lead Miami right now, 3-0 down there. Yankees and Toronto just getting underway. And also, something we'll be checking in a little bit at the end of the show. The Rangers, actually, believe it or not, the New York Rangers reported for training camp today. They're all filed into Tarrytown, New York, to get ready at the Rangers training facility. Peter Laviolette addressed the media and had some interesting things to say. So we'll get into all that a little bit later. But with all that being said, Dan, you know what? Let's just start with one of the feel-good wins from New York that we've had. We've had a lot of losing over the last, you know, a crappy summer for the Mets and the Yankees, a football season that got kicked off with a devastating Aaron Rodgers injury and a tough Giants loss to the Cowboys. Well, the Giants turned that all around on Sunday after they were down 20-0 at halftime, and 28-7 was the height of the amount of points they were down, 21. They erased that whole thing. Ended up tying the game late and then kicking a field goal to take this one in Arizona, 31-28, the biggest Giant comeback victory in the history of their team. And going back even as far to 1949, a stat that we mentioned on the show on Sunday, Dan, you know, you have to be thrilled with how your Giants looked coming out and, you know, getting a big comeback win the other night, right?
Yeah, I was completely thrilled about that. At first, the first half of that game, of course, I'm listening to it as I'm on my way, as I was at a Met game, so I had it on my, I had it on my headphones via the Sirius XM app. So as I'm headed home, right? I caught the whole time I'm out, the whole first half I'm hearing it. Got home in time to catch the second half of the game. I arrived home around halftime. Put on the TV, and I was like saying, oh, this would be a miracle if we come. I went on Twitter and said, if the Giants cut, it was such a so difficult comeback, I felt. I put, if the Giants come from behind and win this, I will listen to an entire Taylor Swift. I will torture myself by listening eventually. I haven't specifically said what day, but it's going to happen, just a matter of when, but I will listen to an entire subject myself to an entire Taylor Swift album picked by one of my Twitter followers who's a Swiftie. That's the specific thing I emphasize. The person who picks the Taylor Swift album I'm tortured by has to be a Swiftie. I thought it was only right that a Swiftie pick the album I have to listen to.
That makes a lot of sense. And by the way, everybody, just so you know, that's definitely going to happen. And that's also going to be some extra content on our Patreon. So I think for $5 a month, that's a pretty good bargain, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good bargain. Me being tortured by a Taylor Swift album that's been unannounced. I've yet to see a response from a Swiftie, and I know there are people that follow me that I follow that are a Swiftie that will hopefully eventually pick the album, and you'll see me being tortured by listening to that said album, whatever album they picked for me to be tortured by.
Well, we'll find a Swiftie, by the way, too. Even if that Swiftie is Aaron Rodgers himself, we're going to find somebody to get you the album that you have to listen to. But you got to be happy, even though it sucks you're going to have to listen to that whole album, because it was worth it, because the Giants came back and won, right?
Yeah, they won it. That was an amazing comeback. I jumped down on my seat in my living room, and I got so excited. I don't know what it was, my hands, I was moving. My hand may have hit my face or something in a way that it pushed my glasses. My glasses went, like, I had never seen a pair of eyeglasses fly so high, but I knew, because this was, of course, it was already dark outside by that time. And as I said, my living room in my house does not have any lights. I knew, where those glasses fell. This is going to be an extra hard time finding these glasses. And it didn't take until maybe like after I was walking Mr. Maloonigan around a little bit before I got ready to watch Anthony's show. Like, so somewhere a little bit before the Anthony Cumia show started was when I found my glasses. By some miracle, I'm saving me from having to spend money on a new pair and going through another one of those pain in the ass eye exams to get a new pair, because that shit's a pain in the ass, those eye exams, especially the part when they dilate your eyes. Lucky you don't have to wear glasses, but I hate that shit when the eye doctor has to dilate your eyes. I feel horrible. It's like I can barely, you know, like it hurts the light until that shit wears out.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely lucky I don't have to go through that yet, but I'm getting a little up there now, and my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, so I'll probably be wearing glasses sooner rather than later.
be glad it's just glasses that you're wearing, because there's some, but at least you'll be able to see, bud.
Good point.
If anything, like me, what happened, as you saw, remember the other one, Halloween, you saw me, I cosplayed as the Charlie Sheen's character in the movie Major League, Rick Vaughn. I cosplayed as his character.
That was a great costume.
Yeah, especially with the glasses that I'm wearing, just really looked like his.
Yeah, you're right. It worked perfect. It worked perfect, man. It was great. But, you know, so we're not going to, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah. So anyway, I was about to say, speaking of that, if Charlie Sheen ever wanted to be a guest on the show, we would more than welcome him. I would love to talk baseball with that guy. I hear he loves baseball, so I think he'd be great to have on the show one day.
Yeah, we definitely need a injection of tiger blood into this to this program. So definitely, Charlie Sheen, you know, good old Wild Thing, has the Ricky Vaughn as the open invitation anytime he wants to come by. No doubt about that. But, you know, so talking about the game and everything, we're not really going to go that in-depth with the game, because we did that on Sunday. We gave our instant reaction. So if you guys want, you could check that out. You know, but we will touch upon it like we have already. Great job by Brian Daboll, I thought, reshuffling the offensive line. Something I think that we're going to talk about in a little bit that the Jets head coach should consider. But, yeah, Daboll just pressed all the right buttons, and – you know, even though it didn't look like it at halftime, the team responded and came alive, because they knew that tomorrow, and we're going to talk about that in a second too, that tomorrow's game is going to be really tough. And if the Giants had lost on Sunday, they'd be staring at 0-3 with their impending matchup against the San Francisco 49ers coming up tomorrow, or if you're watching this the day it debuts, it'll be later tonight. So, yep. Dan, you know, that was definitely a huge win for Daboll and his team.
Yep, I feel like it is, and I feel like that now maybe hopefully will have a good effect on the team into today to Thursday's game against the 49ers, which by the way, if you live in the New York area and you're a Giants fan trying to watch this game but are bummed out you don't have a subscription to Amazon for whatever reason, maybe you can't afford a subscription to Amazon, I've gotten confirmation this game, apparently because of some, I guess this applies to Amazon broadcasts also, the NFL sometimes wants to make sure that the local teams are always shown on network TV in some capacity, even if the game's like broadcasted on ESPN or something. So apparently that this game is going to be, it specifically if you're in the New York area, it'll also be shown on Fox 5 if you're in that viewing area of the, so you'll be able to see the game even if you don't have Amazon if you live in the New York area.
Yeah, luckily they took care of that and did the right thing, because I mean, you know, it's less reasonable to expect people to have the, you know, Amazon package where they can watch that than really any of the other stuff, even like Peacock. It's been pretty cool seeing like football games on Peacock and everything, but they don't have it there exclusively. You could obviously still go to Channel 4 and watch the regular Sunday night game or things like that. Or, you know, I'm a Notre Dame fan, so I check out Notre Dame. And it's cool. If you're on the go, you can watch the game on Peacock, you know, on the go. But it's the same thing, you know, that you're saying. It's not as easily accessible as other things. Like, I mean, maybe it's more than Apple TV, like Major League Baseball has. But, you know, at least the NFL does right by their fan base, unlike Major League Baseball, and make sure that the game is on, you know, regular TV, right?
And like I said, this is specifically the local area of the team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just the local fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody outside of the New York tri-state area is going to have to go on Amazon. But for those those hometown teams that want to be able to watch their team, at least the NFL did right by them.
Yep, exactly. So unfortunately, the sixth borough, a.k.a. Florida, and believe me, I know plenty of Giant fans in Florida, including my Uncle Louie. Big shout out, Uncle Louie. Fortunately, Louie has to stand to watch still.
True. Very true. So, but you know, so going into this, obviously, Giants really are a tale of one half so far this season. I mean, that first game against the Cowboys, you could just take that film and just throw it right in the garbage, because that was just a you know, bad game from start to finish. The game against the Cardinals, that first half, you could pretty much do the same thing. Throw that right in the trash because there's nothing really to look at. But in that second half, the Giants showed you that Daboll can make those corrections, that he can make the adjustments. And who knows, maybe that the Cowboys are just, you know, a really, really good team this year that we didn't expect to come together in this fashion. But, you know, the Giants got their victory. They beat the Cardinals and roll into this game. Now, what's your confidence level heading into this game? Obviously, you know, you've seen three really bad halves of football out of four. Do you think that the Giants are the team we saw for the first three halves of those games? Or are the Giants the team we saw the Cardinals on Sunday?
I feel they're the team that we saw in the second half. I just something in my gut just feels like we're gonna win this game against the 49ers. I feel like also this game might be a close one. It's gonna go down to the fourth quarter, I just feel like.
Well, I mean, that's what the Giants are gonna have to, because I feel like there's gonna be two ways that this game, or actually technically three ways, this game can pull out. If it's a close game, obviously either the Giants or the Niners have a shot. I feel like if it's a blowout, it's only going to go the Niners' way. I don't see the Giants blowing out the 49ers. The 49ers are too good of a football team. if things go awry, I could see the Niners blowing the Giants out. But if the Giants play to their strengths and do exactly what they're supposed to do, now, we say that, but playing to the Giants' strengths is going to be really, really tough this week, because one of the Giants' strengths, and look, people might like Daniel Jones. He's a good quarterback. I like Daniel Jones. I think he gets unfairly criticized a lot. But let's be honest. Daniel Jones' value to the Giants is immeasurable, but he needs the running game to set him up to be effective, a lot like Zach Wilson in the Jets pass offense, where he's going to need an effective run game to have an effective pass game. And right now, that's going to be a lot harder for the Giants on Sunday, tomorrow on Thursday, because Saquon Barkley is having this ankle issue, and now he is 100%, according to Daboll and according to the Giants, he's going to be missing the next three games. So we're not going to be seeing Saquon again until October. Tough spot here to lose him on a short week, too. You'd really love to have your top running back to lean on and to take a lot of the pressure off Daniel Jones. But, you know, what do you think about that, Dan? Do you think that the loss of Saquon Barkley is something the Giants can overcome?
I feel they could overcome it. I just feel like this game's going to be even tougher now. And this one's going to be getting me Thursday night. I mean, I might be waking up some people to block Thursday night, regardless of the outcome.
That's true.
It's going to be me being loud, I mean, during this game.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, we mentioned Saquon, and it's going to be even harder than that now, because now just today, Coach Daboll announced that left tackle Andrew Thomas is also going to be out against the 49ers on this short week. So now Daniel Jones doesn't have his best pass blocker and protector, and he doesn't have his top running back. So against this really, really tough Niners team, as much as I do like this Giants squad and I'm a big fan of Brian Daboll, that's going to be a tough hill to climb against the 49ers. And I would feel better about the Giants if it was here in MetLife. But the fact that they have to go out to San Francisco and play this game is going to be a really, really tall order.
I just hope we're going to win this, because this game's going to – I don't know if I'm going to be calm until after the game. I might end up with a full head of grays after this game.
Well, you know, Dan, look.
You really can't notice, but I feel like if things keep going south like this, they might get more noticeable. And even fact about the grays, the grays on the hair on my head might not be so noticeable, because they're very tiny. They're not like so noticeable. Maybe very few of any strands. If I try growing a beard, it grays up pretty quick. As you've probably seen pictures of me when the Rangers were in the playoffs, you notice how much gray there is when I try to grow a playoff beard. When my playoff beard gets thick enough, depending how long the Rangers playoff run goes, I've had to test for men on my playoff beard. I had to do that in a couple of times in the past during the Rangers playoff, when they've made deep playoff runs. I've had to utilize just for men on that playoff beard.
You've had to call in Keith Hernandez and Walt Clyde Frazier to come in and help you get rid of those pesky grays. But hey, on a brighter note, Dan, at least they'd be gray hairs and they wouldn't be falling out and you look like George Costanza, right?
Yeah, exactly. Though I have to give credit to George Costanza. There were some occasions he put up some good numbers, I have to say.
That's a good point. Got to respect your bald friends on that one, who put up numbers like that. So I can't even argue with that. So, I think that's about going to do it for the Giants right now. I mean, yeah, I think the odds are stacked against them. But the fact of the matter is, the Giants did what they had to do. They lost to a tough Cowboys team. They beat a very beatable Arizona Cardinals team. And now they walk into this game 1-1. Anything can happen. Okay, it looks like, you know, it might be, you know, the 49ers game. But, you know, that's just on paper. And that's all that matters. If you would have told me a week ago that the Jets were going to go out and beat the Bills without Aaron Rodgers, I would have said you were nuts. So who knows? You know, that's why they play the games, right, Dan?
Yeah, exactly. That's why they play the game. So let's see how it turns out. I'll be ready there. Fridge full of Stella, and hopefully some couple slices of New York pizza ready to go.
Yeah, and hopefully by the end of the night you're not yelling Stella. So we'll keep it moving along here, and let's take a look now at the other side of MetLife right now. Is the Jets were crushed in Dallas by the Cowboys, 30-10. Cowboys starting off the year on a roll. They outscored both New York teams by a combined score of 70-10. So, hey, maybe the Cowboys are having a special season. Who knows? It would have been real nice for the Jets to go out there and try and steal a win. But the fact of the matter is, the only way the Jets were going to steal this win yesterday, or I'm sorry, on Sunday, was to have the defense play as well as they did against the Bills on the first game of Monday Night Football, because the defense was great against the Bills on Monday night. They were awful against the Cowboys. They could not get off the field on third down. They allowed CeeDee Lamb to walk all over them and did not match up, Sauce Gardner in a Darrell Revis manner where they kind of, you know, he travels with the best receiver. CeeDee Lamb was all over the Jets for 11 catches and 143 yards, torched their defense. That's why the Cowboys just went out there and walked their way to a 30-10, very worry-free victory. There were a couple of moments where the Jets could have taken the game and at least made a bigger game of it, where, you know, they were down 10-0. Garrett Wilson makes a great play for a 68-yard touchdown. And just streaked all the way to the end zone, outran everybody. It was a great play. Great play by Zach Wilson. Great play by Garrett Wilson. Got to give him credit where credit's due. After that, the wheels just kind of came off. The Jets had a dropped pick by Sauce Gardner that allowed at 10-7 that allowed the Cowboys to continue to drive and eventually make it 18-7. And on that same drive, by the way, we were talking about this on Sunday, how the Jets get screwed with calls every week. Now, you'd think, okay, maybe he's just a Jet fan bitching and moaning because the Jets lost and the Jets don't get calls. Yeah, well, look at this. The Jets have not had a roughing the passer call for them since November 28th, 2021. That's how long it's been since a roughing the passer call was called for the Jets protecting their quarterback. Now, the Jets had a garbage, and anybody watching the game would have told you, garbage roughing the passer call against John Franklin Myers, where they claimed it was a late hit against Dak Prescott. Complete garbage. Well, the NFL backed that up today, because at about 4 o'clock, they put out a statement saying that the John Franklin Myers hit against Dak Prescott was a legal hit, and the Jets should not have gotten flagged. In other words, That drive should not have continued. They should not. Maybe Dallas should have gotten a field goal out of that, but it definitely would not have been a touchdown. That is what makes you furious with these NFL officials, because there's just no accountability. These guys blow calls all the time that change the course of games, and they're not held accountable for it. I mean, at least in baseball now, they have these umpire auditors. So you can tell which umpires blow the most calls. You know, they can't hide Angel Hernandez anymore behind his bad calls. Everybody knows by the stats how bad he is. They should start doing things like that with the NFL officials for how they come up with these terrible, terrible calls that change the outcomes of games, right?
Yeah, for one thing, I got to say about in any sport, umpires or referees, a little word of advice, and I'm sticking by this too, If I had a daughter, I would not let her date an umpire or referee.
That's the famous line that you use, and it's true, man, because you get sick of these guys. You get sick of these guys. They blow these calls. They're not held accountable. And, you know, look, do I think that it would have, you know, turned the tide and the Jets would have won the game? Not as much as the Sauce Gardner dropped interception. I think that because that could have put the Jets ahead 14-10 and completely changed the complexion of the game. And come on, Sauce. I love you, but you got to catch that interception. You can't – if you want to be talking 85 Bears and you want to be comparing yourself to Darrelle Revis and Marcus Peters and these great cornerbacks that we've seen over the last few years, you know, Charles Woodson, Deion Sanders, you want to be in that conversation, you got to catch these interceptions, right, Dan?
Yeah, exactly. And right now, until you've done that, you can't say that.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that he's a very good cornerback. You could say that he's on his way up. And then, but hey, I mean, you drop gift interceptions like that, and that's just not a good look, especially when, you know, your team needs the Jets. In order for the Jets to win with Zach Wilson at quarterback, a couple of things has to happen. They have to play pristine defense. They have to hand the ball off a lot, which we'll get into in a second. They didn't do that at all. Breece Hall actually commented after the game and said one of the reasons why they struggled moving the ball offensively is because he only touched the ball 4 times. You know what? Most of the time, even if it's true, I don't like players speaking out of turn like that. But you know what, though? Breece Hall's 100% right. Why would he get the ball 4 times? This is a guy that ran for 130 yards against the Bills, one of the better defenses in the league the week before, coming off an ACL tear. And now you have him here and you give him 4 carries. And not to mention, this is one of the things that drove me crazy in this game too. So the Jets start off a drive, 1st and 10, hand the ball off to Breece Hall, 9-yard gain, 2nd and 1. So what do they do on 2nd and 1? You'd think they just gained 9 yards with Breece Hall. Let's give the ball back to him and get that first down. No, they come out and pass the ball like Patrick Mahomes is playing quarterback for them, or, you know, John Elway came out of retirement and he's playing for the Jets, and suddenly, you know, they're in a passing offense. You can't be doing that. You know, Rex Ryan said when he was the Jets coach, there were weeks where he was prepared to run the ball 50 plus times in a game. The Jets have to get in that mindset, or this season's going to be flushed down the toilet real quick. Right, Dan?
Yeah, exactly. I saw some highlights, and that was just I can just hear the curse is coming out of every Jets fan that probably watched that game.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. My dog Murphy was avoiding me after that game because of the words that were flying out of my mouth coming out of the end of that game.
I could imagine barking up a storm.
Yeah, really. Out of pain from having to just watch that garbage game the Jets put out there. Very, very disappointing game for Jets fans. But you know what? I want to look ahead now. We're looking ahead. Jets, Patriots now. Patriots coming into MetLife Sunday, 1 p.m. You know, the Giants are out on the West Coast tomorrow, so the Jets got Sunday all to themselves, which, by the way, as a side note, tomorrow, immediately following the Jets game, immediately following the Giants and 49ers game on Thursday Night Football, we'll be doing our live Patreon show immediately after that, our little Giants 49ers reaction. And then on Sunday, immediately following the 1 o'clock game. So you figure the Giant game tomorrow is probably going to be around 11:30. The Jet game after that is probably going to be around 4 o'clock after both games end. So if you want to hear our immediate response, please do us a favor and subscribe to our Patreon. And by the way, I just saw out of the corner of my eye, Mark Vientos just hit his 2nd home run of the night. And the Mets have a 4-1 lead. So Vientos is starting to look pretty good now. I'm liking what I see out of the kid. And, yep. and we'll get to the Mets in a minute too. So I'm sorry, what were you gonna say?
I was about to say it's about time they're finally giving Vientos a chance out there.
Yeah, you're right. So he's doing something with it too. So, and like I said, we'll get to the Mets in a minute. We'll finish up with the Jets here real quick. But definitely a good sign down in Miami from our Mets. So Jets Patriots now. Look, it's been a very, very bleak, to say the least, outlook against the Patriots for the last decade plus. You know, the last time that the Jets actually right now are 2.5-point underdogs at home against the Patriots. The Jets 1-1, have a win against the Bills. The Patriots 0-2 somehow are still, you know, the favorites in this game. I guess with the history, I can't really blame them, and Zach Wilson is quarterback. But, you know, the last time the Jets were actually favored in a game against New England was November of 2011. It's been a long time since anybody had any confidence the Jets were going to be beating the Patriots. And it hasn't actually happened. We discussed this the other day, and I know this off the top of my head because this date is burnt in my memory because it's the last time. But the Jets have not beaten the Patriots since December 27th, 2015. 14 consecutive losses against New England and Bill Belichick. The bulk of that was with Tom Brady as quarterback, but obviously the last couple of years he hasn't been there, and the Jets still haven't been winning. Robert Saleh himself, 0-4 against Belichick and the Patriots. So, 10 of those losses aren't his, but the four most recent ones are. And the two last year were really, really ugly. Somehow the Jets managed to lose a game where they didn't allow a touchdown defensively. They ended up losing the game 10-3, I believe it was. Just terrible. One of the worst losses I've ever seen. They allowed one field goal and lost the game because they didn't even allow that touchdown. That was the walk-off special teams touchdown for the Patriots against the Jets last year. So that was fun to watch. So, looking to erase that terrible history against New England this week, you know, what do you think, Dan? As a from an outside perspective, the Patriots 0-2? They're not the Patriots of old. The Jets aren't exactly the Jets we expected with Zach Wilson instead of Aaron Rodgers. But what do you expect to happen in this game?
I just feel this game might look like it's going to be a close game, like. It could easily be won by a field goal. Like, either way, this game is going to be, I feel, is going to go in the hands of the defense.
Yeah, this feels like it's going to be another late defensive struggle. Unless the Jets do the right thing. Because, look, just a couple of weeks ago on Sunday Night Football was this past Sunday, where it was the Dolphins and the Patriots. And Raheem Mostert, the former 49er who was, you know, on that Robert Saleh team that went to the Super Bowl, that he was the defensive coordinator of, Raheem Mostert ended up running for 2 touchdowns, 100-plus yards, and completely knocked around this Patriots run defense. And as a Jets fan, it makes you salivate for that defense, the run defense at least, because the Patriots still have a really good pass rush. And still defend the pass really well, which is enough to confuse Zach Wilson. But their run defense seems susceptible. And if the Jets are able to get, you know, Cook and Breece Hall going early, then I think that they should be able to move the ball and take a lot of that pressure off of Zach Wilson, because that's going to be the key to the rest of this season and this game specifically. Run the ball down their throats, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm looking at this game, and if that can happen, the Jets could hopefully pull off of finally beating the Patriots. Which the Patriots these days look—it's hard to believe that they look vulnerable. I mean, this is the same thing. It's like the shocker when you've seen when Michael Jordan retired. Seeing the Bulls vulnerable. You thought something you'd never see that after all those. All those years, unfortunately, us Knicks fans had to deal with the Knicks losing to the Bulls so many times in the playoffs.
That's true. It was like year after year in the 90s. And that That was only 10 years. I mean, think about this. The Patriots have been doing it to the Jets for twice that long. So it's been a really, really rough 2 decades against this team. And it's going to – this Sunday is going to go 2 ways. This is how we're going to wrap this little football half of this episode up right now. And this Sunday is going to go 2 ways. Either the Jets are going to win, and there is going to be even with the sadness of the Rodgers injury and everything, the downness from losing to Dallas in the fashion which they did last week, even with that, there will be elation from the Jets fans. MetLife Stadium is going to explode with happiness if the Jets win this game. People are going to go crazy. Jets fans want something to cheer so badly. It's been so long, and just the kick in the groin from Aaron Rodgers going down earlier this year, you know, really sent a lot of people, including myself, spiraling. But the win against the Patriots would mean so much, because not to mention, if they lose that game to the Patriots, it's going to be the complete opposite. Robert Saleh will buy himself a couple of weeks of people not saying he's on the hot seat and calling for his job if something goes wrong, which I think is a bad mistake anyway. But if the Jets lose that game, everything gets ramped up 10 notches. I mean, and that's not even saying enough. People are going to be, if the Jets lose on Sunday, and I'm not going to be one of them, because, you know, look, Robert Saleh lost his Hall of Fame quarterback 4 plays into the season. I think no matter what happens this year, him and Joe Douglas should be back next year, unless they go 1-16 and the locker room completely implodes on Saleh. Then I can think about something different. But you know, if things go the way that we seem, I think that the best thing for the Jets is to keep Saleh in place, keep Douglas in place, and hey, people are going to be calling for their job. That's the fact of the matter. If they lose this game on Sunday, everybody's going to turn. Even the ones that haven't turned already are going to turn against Zach Wilson if he has a bad game on Sunday. They're going to turn no matter what happens. They could lose by 1 point, or they could lose by a field goal in overtime, and people are going to turn on Robert Saleh, even if it's not his fault. Even if he did everything right, it just didn't work out in the end, people are going to be calling for his job. And that's what's going to happen, because then the Jets are going to be 1-2. They're going to be playing Kansas City, staring 1-3 right in the face. And then, you know, look, they go to Denver, which isn't easy. Denver is not necessarily a great team, but that's not going to be easy. And they play Philadelphia after. I mean, there's a legitimate shot that if the Jets lose this game, you're looking at 1-5. I mean, 1-5 or 2-4 compared to a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the Super Bowl. So, look, that's a Sunday is a pivotal game in this Jets season and in the careers of everybody involved in the Jets side of it. So I hope that they realize what's on the line right now, because people are going to lose their shit, whether it's right or wrong, if they lose that game. So I just get that off my chest. Now,
the outcome of the game, I feel like, if they win, I'm going to need a defibrillator for you. If they, I might need a defibrillator standing by you. So,
yeah. Yep. You're definitely going to have to, you know, get the defibrillator, get the shock treatment, get everything, because I'm going to be losing my mind one way or another. At 4 o'clock, I'm probably going to be out of my mind on Sunday, because either I'm going to be losing it because the Jets lost again, or I'm going to be losing it because they just won an incredible game. So you are absolutely right about that, my friend. And, yeah, so just I'm sorry, what were you
going to say? Say, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you know the deal. You've been around me long enough to know that's the case. So, yeah, I want to keep it rolling along here now, and I do want to talk about this too, which we really haven't talked about too much yet. So we're talking about the Mets, we're talking about Mark Vientos, Kodai Senga's out here right now throwing another great game to the sixth inning. He's actually third in the league in ERA right now, having a fabulous, fabulous rookie season. I think he's a slam dunk for Rookie of the Year. But, you know, who knows? Major League Baseball always manages to screw things up. But, you know, what do you think, Dan? We're talking about what were you going to say?
Yeah, Singo looks like right now definitely on pace for Rookie of the Year. I just feel like just something in my gut had a feeling, even though maybe there was this unknown with him. I just had a feeling because I feel like this guy was, even though he had pitched in Japan, I just feel like he was one of these players that was looked like he was. I was reading how this guy seemed like he was readying himself to play in MLB. I feel like he, I heard stuff like he was warming up because I hear how the baseballs are. They're kind of similar in Japan, but they're slightly different. There's some slight difference that are kind of hard to explain. But I hear he was warming up with like a regulation MLB ball when he was warming up for prior to games and stuff. And then, you know, when taking his throws, he was trying to get used to an MLB regulation ball. And he just felt like he was readying himself to play in MLB.
And oh yeah, you're right.
And it's been paying off. And so I feel like this guy, I know this is just 1 year, but this guy keeps it up. He might be one of the greatest pitchers to come out of that country.
Yeah. I definitely don't disagree with you. I think that Senga has had a great season so far. He's racked up the strikeouts, and I think he should be really a slam dunk for Rookie of the Year. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a little more difficult on the American League side. So, and Corbin Carroll with 25 home runs and 50 stolen bases for the Diamondbacks this year still might sway people. So, you know, I think either way they have a good choice. But, yeah, Senga should definitely be in that discussion. But, you know, the guy that's going to be making all the decisions for what's going to be happening going on after this season is former Brewers general manager David Stearns, former Met intern back in 2008. He is set to return to the organization as the president of baseball operations, and that deal kicks in on October 1st, 2023. A lot of different feelings about that, Dan. You know, the news broke a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, me and you were both really kind of down on the Mets and really up on football. So we kind of let that slip through the cracks a little bit. But now, as we're coming to the end of the season and this deal is just about to kick in, what are your thoughts on David Stearns coming back to the Mets?
I feel this is a big, it's going to be, I think down the line, going to be a key move. Steve Cohen seemed to be eyeing this guy for a while. Unfortunately, the Brewers wouldn't let him, despite his contract, even you know, breaking a contract and leaving, go here. It looks like he's now going here, and this guy, not only does he have that track record with Milwaukee that he had being in the small market, he's a big market team with an owner like Steve Cohen. I feel like he'll be able to up what he did in Milwaukee, being the fact he's got the financial resources of a team owned by a guy like Steve Cohen.
Yeah, you're right, man. And, you know, looking at his track record too, so he made he came into the Brewers in 2018. He got them to the playoffs in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021. So four straight seasons of making the playoffs. And in 2022, only missed the playoffs by one game. So you got to give him credit for that. He's one game shy of having the Brewers in the playoffs for five straight years. You know, and you just got to look at what he's done he's never shied away. And a lot of these small market teams, and he had one of the lowest payrolls in baseball during his tenure there. And when you look at what he had to do and what he had to deal with, he never shied away from the big deal. You know, we saw Chaim Bloom go to the Red Sox, and it seemed to me like he always shied away from the big deal. He wanted to take the Tampa Bay game plan, bring it to Boston, and not change it at all, even though they have a much bigger wallet there in Boston. And it blew up in his face, and now he's out of a job. David Stearns, on the other hand, never did that. Remember, the Brewers went out there and signed Lorenzo Cain to a big contract to bring him in and play center field, taking him away from the Royals. You know, remember that team that beat the Mets in the World Series? Well, Lorenzo Cain was a big part of that, and he signed him to that contract, noting, you know, the experience and the talent that he brought to their roster. And even though that deal, you know, kind of tailed off at the end, he was a very big piece of that team for the first few years of that contract and was a big reason why they were in the playoffs. Now, another thing, if you want to look on the trade side, this is the same guy that also executed the trade for Christian Yelich before Yelich, you know, was the MVP caliber player. He traded for him, and then Yelich blossomed into that player under his watch. So you got to give him credit for that, too. And, you know, just looking at a couple of examples like that, you know, Dan, you have to get excited about the potential of what this guy's going to do.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like this guy's going to be, it's a big deal than what we expect. And I feel like if the Mets are going to have success this year, in 2024 and beyond, I feel this guy is going to play a big factor. I mean, you even go way back to when this guy was just an intern. Omar Minaya, who was the Mets GM back then, insisted to the then Mets ownership, Fred Wilpon, that they keep this guy, that they hire this guy as a full-time employee of the Mets. You know, somehow, maybe, I guess, one of Omar Minaya's assistants. Unfortunately, at the time, Wilpon didn't kind of see eye to eye. We know how things kind of got a little bit with the Wilpon years, and then work out. And despite all the recommendations, despite the Omar and I having a keen eye that this guy had the potential to be a great baseball executive.
Yeah, and he really turned into that. And he even was in Houston helping build Houston into that championship contender too.
Yeah, so this guy, we got a guy with a lot of credibility, and I'm expecting to only go up from here with this guy. I expect to go only the one direction, and that's up as high as a kite.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I like the positivity. You know, now there's a couple of other things we have to consider. You know, when a new guy comes in, a lot of the time, you know, they say new boss, same as the old boss. Well, that is the case in a lot of situations, but in a lot of situations, the new boss likes to clean house and bring in his own guys. So, you know, let's start at the top. GM Billy Epler. Now, let's remember, David Stearns was the former GM of the Milwaukee Brewers, but he's not coming to the Mets for that job. He's going to be involved in all the decision-making, but he is not the general manager. He's above the general manager. He's the Mets president of baseball operations. So he's the guy that hires and fires the general manager and makes a whole bunch of personnel decisions across the entire organization from top to bottom. Now, when you look at that, do you expect Billy Epler to return as general manager last year? I mean, I understand he's got a good relationship with Steve Cohen. He's got a good relationship with Buck and a lot of the guys over there, but Is Billy Epler going to last under David Stearns?
I just have a feeling it's going to be a 50-50. I feel maybe if he is going to – I feel it's going to be 1 year, a show-me year for Billy Epler, I feel like.
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't see him coming in and saying, hey, Billy, you know, you've got 1 year to prove yourself. I don't see that. I see – it as being either, okay, we're sticking with Billy for the long term, or, okay, Billy, I'm sorry, but I didn't hire you, and it's time to move on. You know, whether that would be the right call, I don't know. To be honest, I like Billy Epler. I think he's a good guy. I think he has some good baseball sense. But his track record here with the Mets, you know, especially a lot of these trades, I mean, we could bring up Darren Ruff, you could bring up Daniel Vogelback, you could bring up a lot of these bullpen moves he's made, Trevor Gott. You know, you can bring up a lot of these names, and a lot of it reflects poorly on Billy Epler's tenure as Mets GM. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big decision for David Stearns to make right off the bat. And another one, and I guess the Billy Epler decision is included in this too, is should Buck Showalter be back in 2024? And I can't believe how quickly Met fans have turned on Buck Showalter after how great, you know, he was well received last season. What do you think, Dan? Do you think that Buck Showalter has earned the right to be back in 2024?
I feel he has. I just feel Met fans have just been a little bit upset at how the season turned out. There were a bunch of circumstances that didn't turn out in our favor. I mean, for one thing, the Diaz injury. This team really had no bullpen, and our pitching just kind of fell apart. I feel Buck Showalter, I feel this is going to be, from what I'm hearing, this is entirely going to be on Buck Showalter's decision. And hopefully he comes back. I've heard some players say this guy just has a lot of credibility as a manager.
Yeah, and Lindor came out in, you know, in big defense of Buck.
Yeah, so I just feel like Buck Showalter will probably, I just feel like he'll get at least one more year, I feel like. And kind of need, because it really needs to be, I guess this team seems to, I just feel like a manager with this credibility of Buck Showalter seems to get the most out of the team. And I feel that it's what needs to be done. But hopefully Buck will come back, and hopefully not listen to suggestions by the assistant to the traveling secretary, because we all remember what happened with that cotton uniform incident when his days when Buck was managing the Yankees. We remember that incident. How horrible that turned out.
I mean, yeah, the last thing that we need to hear is the announcer yell out, "And Alonso just split his pants."
Yeah. Exactly. I still remember that headline on the Daily News with that at decision just ripped apart.
Oh my God! No, it's true. It's true. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think Buck should be back next year. The amount of Met fans that have turned on Buck Showalter and Pete Alonso is I can't believe it. Hearing people say they should get rid of Pete, he's, you know, it just, Pete Alonso is one of the best players the Mets have ever produced. So if the Mets get rid of Pete Alonso, I'd rather see the Mets get rid of those fans before they get rid of Pete Alonso.
I feel like that isn't really the majority of the Met fans. I think a lot of the Met fans want to keep Pete Alonso. I feel like a lot of the fans that are smart enough that are realized, even some of the players just realize Alonso seemed to just has this. He seems to be Alonso's the guy is a team player, and it's just they seem to feed off of him a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's one of the leaders in there, and the fact is too that I feel like a lot of Met fans still live in the world where the Wilpons own the Mets. So they're like, oh, if the Mets give Pete Alonso a big contract, they're never going to recover from it. Do you realize that we have the richest owner in sports right now? Steve Cohen is the richest owner in sports. So guess what? If they want to give a $200 million contract to Pete Alonso, who's hit more home runs than anybody since 2019, they should. And if the contract in a couple of years blows up in their face, and Pete Alonso turns into the next coming of Chris Davis, well, guess what? You eat that contract like the Yankees would back in the day and move on to the next one. It's not going to be the end of the world if Pete Alonso is just, you know, turns into Chris Davis in a couple of years. So get out of that mindset, because you have to pay the guy.
Yeah, exactly. Pay the man. Pay the man.
No doubt about it. Give him that cash, man. He earned it.
We only done it. I know plenty of people, they wish they had an owner like Steve Cohen.
Yeah, you're right. And the Yankees wish they had, you know, another power bat on their team to go along with Aaron Judge. They'd want a first baseman with pop like Pete Alonso. Anybody in baseball would want a first baseman with pop like Pete Alonso. So just because he's not hitting 300 this year, don't say the guy shouldn't get paid, because second off, you know, the second, if the Mets trade Pete, you know, wherever he goes, like let's just say they trade him to the Cubs, you know, Pete's going to go there and have a great year and hit 50 home runs. Then all the Mets are going to be, all the Met fans that wanted him traded are going to be sitting here saying, if we only had a bat like Pete Alonso, like you that, don't trade guys like that.
Yeah. They should not trade Pete. It would be the worst mistake since 19 in Mets history, since 19, I think it was 76 when Seaver was traded. Am I correct? 76?
Close. 77. June of 77.
It'll be the worst mistake in Mets history since 1977. And
no doubt about it. No doubt.
I know plenty of Mets fans that remember that. I've been relatively remember that. I'm sure you will hear them say how horrible they felt when that happened. And we don't want that to happen.
Yeah. And we've had to go through crap like that in the past, where, you know, obviously it's not to the same extent. We've seen a lot of our big guys leave. And there are some guys, you know, like Jacob deGrom, I'm sorry. Even though I know the contract worked out because they didn't give it to him and he went to Texas and blew his arm out pretty much, Jacob deGrom should never have pitched for another team aside from the Mets. You know, Noah Syndergaard should never have pitched for another team besides the Mets. You know, when you look at like David Wright did the right thing where the Mets were able to keep him around the whole time. Jose Reyes was the same thing. Jose Reyes should have never played for another team besides the Mets, but the Mets end up always letting these guys go and getting nothing back for him. And to be honest, if you trade Pete Alonso off a season like this, you're trading him at his lowest value. So you're not going to get anything for him anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just feel like Pete will do the right thing. As long as Scott Boras doesn't rear his ugly head. Another thing, Scott Boras, stay away from Pete. Scott Boras.
Yeah, you're right about that. No doubt about that. So as we're coming to the end here right now, I do want to get on two last topics before we get out of here. The Yankees and the New York Rangers. Real quick on the Yanks. Yankees back over 500, but they're still 9 games out of the wild card. I still can't believe there are actually fans that think that the Yankees are going to go on some kind of wild run and make the playoffs. But hey, whatever floats your boat. They're playing Toronto tonight at Yankee Stadium, down 1-0 early on in that game. You know, what do you think, Dan, with the way this Yankee season's gone? They managed to fight their way back to 500. But the real question is that I have is, should Brian Cashman be back in 2024? Now, I'm not saying will he, because honestly, I don't think there's any way the Yankees fire Brian Cashman, because they just gave him an extension last year, which by the way, they shouldn't have done. Brian Cashman should have been fired after last season for another failed playoff outing, but because then it turns around this year and blows up in their face to a year where the Yankees are not going to see the postseason for the first time since 2016. And, you know, what do you think, Dan? Should Cashman be back?
I think he should be fired, so fired right now at this moment.
Yeah.
Guy has not. I feel like Cashman has just lost his touch. This is not that era when the Yankees had this insane dynasty where they just felt invulnerable. This is just a vulnerable Yankees team. I just feel like also the last couple of years, the ownership of the Yankees hasn't been as fiery since George Steinbrenner has passed away. I just feel like George Steinbrenner would be rolling in his grave right now.
No doubt about it, man. You're definitely right. And, you know, you pointed out, too, that, you know, Cashman going back to those dynasty years and, you know, okay, he walked into a great situation that was architected by Gene Michael, who, you know, set up that whole dynasty thing, and then Cashman took over and reap the benefits of 98, 99, and 2000. I got to give him credit, though, for that 2019 that he was able to squeeze one more championship out of. But then, even if you want to fast forward to 2017, that 2017 Yankee team was loaded with talent, absolutely loaded. Think of all the guys that they had. You had the young Aaron Judge. You know, you had Gary Sanchez in who people thought was going to be the next big thing. You know, this Yankee team was loaded top to bottom. Obviously, Gleyber Torres, who they were waiting on, came over in that Aroldis Chapman deal the year before. There were just so many things that was going on with the Yankees where you could point to and say, wow, this team is really set up for success. And if I would have told you in 2017 that we'd be sitting here in 2023 and the Yankees not only would have not won a World Series, but have not even made it to one, I would have told you that the Yankees completely botched this thing, which they definitely did. You know, the Yankees should have been in on Bryce Harper when he was a free agent. They should have been in on Manny Machado. They should have been in a couple of years before that with Max Scherzer before he even went to the Nationals. The Yankees were not throwing their money around the way the Yankees should. And not to mention all these young players the Yankees have had, Justice Sheffield, all these guys the Yankees were pointing out and saying, these is going to be the next big guys. These are the baby bombers. Everybody but Judge flared out. And they didn't get anything for them. That's the main thing. I feel like Brian Cashman completely wasted so much potential from 2017 on, and that's why he should be fired, in my opinion. But to be honest, and we'll end with the Yankee talk with this, Dan, we both think that he should be fired, but the question is, will Hal Steinbrenner admit that he was wrong a year ago to extend him and eat the money and fire Brian Cashman? Because I don't believe that he will. I think Cashman is here in 2024 no matter what. What do you think?
I feel the same thing. I feel he's here no matter what.
So moving on from the Yankees now, we had a couple of nice prospect games last week. I don't know if you caught any of them, Dan, but it was the Rangers and the Flyers. They had a bunch of their prospects meet. Last year, these two teams set the same thing where they had their prospects meet up. And the Flyers took both games last year. Well, the Rangers returned the favor this year, and that was actually a really motivating factor for a lot of the kids on the Rangers side. I heard them say that they remembered getting beat in both those games by the Flyers last year, and they were motivated to beat them twice this year and return that favor. You know, what are your thoughts about that, Dan, about the Rangers coming out and these kids looking really good right out of the gate here?
I have to say that is exactly what I want to see in a hockey team. I just feel like the Rangers are in good shape, hopefully for a couple of years down the line, maybe even this year, maybe seeing some of these prospects. That is just what you want to see in a hockey player, the fiery, especially a major division rival against against the Flyers, a team I feel history with a bunch of goons on this team. You want that fiery edge. Hockey team.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that, Dan. I 100% agree. You know, you want those guys that find a way to motivate themselves, find something or a reason to get up and get into the game. That's what they did. Really, really great job by a lot of these kids. I was very impressed with what I saw. Bobby Trevino is a guy that really stood out to me in that game. I would keep my eye on him because I could see him cracking the NHL roster at some point this year, maybe not directly out of camp, but I could definitely see him cracking the roster this year. one other thing I wanted to talk about was head coach Peter Laviolette was addressing the media for the first time today. You know, the former Islander coach, former Flyers coach, former this guy's been everywhere. He's a hell of a coach, and now he takes his show here to the New York Rangers. It was very cool seeing him in Tarrytown. This is a guy that, commands a lot of respect and expects things to be done right. And not that Gerard Gallant didn't, because I think Gerard Gallant was a good head coach too, but I think Laviolette is a much more structured head coach. And one thing that I liked, he touched on on two big things that I want your opinion on, Dan. One thing that he touched on was that he's going to keep the leadership group together for the Rangers this year, meaning that all the captains are going to remain the same. There was a lot of questions about Jacob Trouba and his ability as Rangers captain last year. What did you think, Dan? Were you approving of it, or were you down on Trouba as captain by the end of last year?
I feel he was an okay captain. I just feel like, unfortunately, last year we faced a brick wall in the playoffs. Unfortunately, somehow we didn't take enough shots against that rookie goalie that the Devils threw out against us.
Yeah, I think unfortunately the Rangers mentally put up their own brick wall, because we saw that kid get taken apart in the second round by Carolina, and for some reason the Rangers just could not mentally beat that kid. I don't know what it was, but the Rangers just got in their own head and could not figure it out. And I agree with you. That was worrisome for the leadership group to blow a series like that. That's a series the Rangers should not have lost in a million years. Because you saw the Devils are a decent team. They're not bad, but they were not good enough to beat the Rangers last year. And it was just a terrible, terrible job by the Rangers and their entire coaching staff that they blew that series against the Devils. And to be honest, people deserve to lose their jobs because of stuff like that when you fail at that magnitude. And I will say there's a couple of good things that I liked about Trouba. I liked when the team started off poorly last year. I didn't like that, but I liked his response to it, where when they were losing a game at Madison Square Garden in December, still mired in this funk, Jacob Trouba ripped his helmet off and threw it at the bench and just to let his frustration out. And that really inspired the Rangers, where it fired the team up. They came back and won the game that night. They went on a tear after that, where they really positioned themselves highly in the standings and made themselves an attractive place for guys like Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko to come. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. But, you know, that was a good thing for Trouba to inspire the team like that. But yeah, I agree with you that something was wrong by the end of last year, because that resulted in the loss to the Devils. But the other thing I wanted to get your opinion on, Dan, was that one thing that really caught my eye is that Alexis Lafreniere, according to head coach Peter Laviolette, is going to be opening camp on the right wing, he didn't say which line. I'm not sure if he's zeroing in on having Kapokako on that top line or Lafreniere, but one way or another, both guys are going to be on the first and second line this year, meaning they're going to be getting big-time minutes with Mika Zibanejad and, Artemi Panarin and Chris Kreider, and everybody's going to be in that mix of, Trocheck, and that whole, group right there. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Kako and specifically Lafreniere on the right side fit into that mix, right?
Yeah, I just feel like Lafreniere is due for that breakout season this year. I just something in my guts just feels like it.
Yeah, he better, man. He better, because this is this isn't necessarily a make or break year. He signed a bridge contract with the Rangers, so he's signed up for this year. I signed up for next year. But one of these years, this year or next year, I mean, he's got to have that breakout year that you just mentioned, because he's a former number one overall pick. He is producing points at a rate that we have not seen a number one pick do in about at least 10 years, maybe more, since a number one overall pick has performed this poorly. So we just got to hope that breakout year is right around the corner for Lafreniere. And maybe sticking him on the top line with these guys and giving him more power play time along with that is going to help pump those numbers up, right?
Yeah. I don't want to look at this year's later and think, oh, we should have went with Hughes in that draft.
Well, Hughes, well, no, you're thinking of the Kapokako draft, because Hughes went number one the year before and Kako went number two. So I agree with you. I would have loved to have Hughes, but unfortunately, we didn't even have the option to get him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I got mixed up. I forgot. I thought that was the same draft.
Yeah, yeah. So unfortunately, we didn't even have the option.
They made a little mistake on my memory. My memory got a little bit fuzzy about that draft.
That's all right. We're still just jumping back into hockey anyway. So, you know, we got to get those hockey cobwebs out. But yep. I think that, yeah.
I'll be full on ready, rocking my Rangers jersey and my Brooklyn hat. Ready to go in my living room and probably making a lot of noise that Maloon again will respond with the barking as always during hockey season.
Exactly, man. Yeah, so I think that's just about going to do it for us today. Before we get out of here, Dan, you have anything you'd like to plug for yourself?
Sure. My Twitter account, Bobo103NYC. And, of course, my Instagram, Bobo718DK. And, of course, my YouTube account, Daniel. It's Daniel. It's one word. It's Daniel Curlin. And there's going to be some content out. Obviously, there's going to be some funny videos. There's going to be stuff I'm filming for, you know, like little. We're going to be opening our Patreon show with some little funny videos and stuff that I'm going to be filming. But over time, maybe like, I think maybe a month after you've seen them as openings on Patreon videos, you'll see them on YouTube like a month later. But.
Well, we're gonna have that as a lot of exclusive content on there. We'll see. Maybe we'll put some stuff out later. Maybe we won't. But we're gonna play it by ear. But also, I think what I'm gonna put up on Patreon as exclusive content in the next, you know, week or so, maybe the next couple of days, depending on how quickly I get around to it. If you recall, we did a show where you were a guest with me on my old show, Coffee with Kramer, where me and you were talking about. When we went to the Halloween party at Anthony Cumia's house, and we were talking about how when I was Captain Morgan and how I was accused of throwing up in a bed in Anthony's house upstairs, which obviously I did not do, and was later cleared on the Cumia show by both Anthony Cumia and Dave Landau. And there's an interview where me and you are discussing this whole thing, and it's a pretty funny interview. So I think eventually... I'm going to add that as a little bonus clip on our Patreon as well.
Yep, exactly. A little funny thing that'll take you back to the days when you'd find back in the days when the compound existed. And you'd find me and you'd likely find me and Robert at those amazing Halloween parties that Anthony threw back in those days. So there'll be some content there.
Absolutely, man. A lot of funny stuff.
And trust me, I had a blast with doing. I had a blast doing. All you Patreon people, you'll be glad to join that. And plus, like I said, once I step up and decide what Taylor Swift album I will be tortured with, We'll have a video of that on Patreon for you.
Absolutely. So do yourself a favor and subscribe today. It's only $5, and we really appreciate all the support from all of our friends and family. So thank you, everybody, for taking the time to check out the Best Seat in the House podcast today. If you want to follow me, you can check out all of our stuff right in the bottom of this screen, our Twitter account, our Instagram, everything else. You can check us out. At Best Seat in the House podcast. So, and on Twitter, obviously, at BSith_podcast. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in and checking the show out today. If you want, please subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/Best Seat in the House podcast. And you can check out all of our extra stuff, not to mention at our YouTube. If you're not subscribed yet, please subscribe to our YouTube for free and subscribe to all the other stuff we have. We have, a whole bunch of stuff for free. The Patreon is the only thing you got to pay for. So please do us a favor and check us out. As always, I'm your host, Rob Kramer. This is my co-host, Daniel Bobo Curlin, and we'll catch you next week on the Best Seat in the House podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.